Hello and welcome to Lush. Many of us with an interest in the natural world have known for years that children and young people are spending less and less time outdoors, losing their connection with nature. A recent survey suggested that many children can't identify common garden flowers. Half couldn't identify arguably the UK's most distinctive bird, the kingfisher. A fifth of young people can't even identify a badger, despite one featuring in the badge of Harry Potter's very own Hufflepuff house. Many of us have known for years that basic natural history knowledge is draining away, but few of us have done anything about it. But then, few of us are Mary Colwell. A Bristol-based naturalist and broadcaster, Mary has a remarkable can-do attitude. As she says in this interview, "If I see a problem, I want to try and solve it. I may not get it right, but I'm going to try. And until we try, we won't know, will we?" In 2011, she floated the idea of a GCSE to address this lack of connection with nature through the education system. The idea was politely received, but at the time didn't get very far. Move forward to 2019, and we're close to exam boards launching the first ever GCSE in natural history. My name is Charlie Moores, and I visited Mary to learn more. You started this big push, Mary, in about 2011. It must seem either a very long time ago or not very long ago at all. But here we are, and you've made a lot of progress over the last few years, especially.
Yes, I mean, it's kind of just galloped ahead in the last few months almost. So in 2011, it was like one of these great bolts from the blue. You can't explain where you suddenly get an idea from. And spookily, I just happened to be in the same room as Tony Juniper at the time.
Right.
And I mentioned it to him, and he thought this was a great idea. And he went off and wrote an article for The Guardian, and it generated quite a bit of discussion, and people got excited, and I thought, oh, this is great, it's going to be easy. And then nothing. And whenever I mentioned it to anybody who knew about education, they kept saying, just drop it. You know, you haven't got a hope. The government had introduced new GCSEs, everybody was a bit stressed about it all, and schools were just trying to deal with what they were given. They just did not want anything new. So I just let it drop. Then I got this sort of urge to do something again in 2017, and I launched a government petition, one of those online petitions.
Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah. Very quickly got 10,000 signatures, and then Theresa May decided to have a snap election. So that pulls any petitions. But 10,000 is enough to get a government response. And the government response said, written response said, look, we're doing it anyway. Biology got it covered. We just don't think you've got a case. So then I thought, well, I don't know what to do now again. And again, I let it drop. Just kind of felt like I'd reached a brick wall with it. And then out of the blue, Caroline Lucas contacted me on Twitter. And
fantastic.
It was a completely unsolicited, welcome bit of contact. And once Caroline got involved, she knew how to work the political system. And she got us to see Michael Gove, who was the Secretary of State for Education. Michael Gove was incredibly helpful, actually, and introduced us to a lot of people. And most importantly, to the Oxford and Cambridge exam board. And it's Tim Oates in OCR who has taken it like a very good rugby player. He's grabbed the ball and he's run with it. And he has basically got it over the line, which has been quite an extraordinary experience. So in the last year, it has gone from a stall sort of, I know there's something in this, but I don't know what to do, to blimey, I can barely keep up with the events that are happening.
And do you think that's come entirely because it was picked up by Caroline Lucas? Because
yeah,
she put it into the Green Party manifesto. She
did. And it was. I mean, I have to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to Caroline for just saying we're going to make this happen.
We need 630 Caroline
Lucases. We need so many Caroline Lucases. And she's so gracious with it, and she's just said, how can I help? Well, this is my area of expertise, let's see what we can do. And she has been a stalwart supporter of it right the way through. And Tim Oates from OCR as well has been exactly the same. He has been so helpful. So the three of us together, we have managed to get it over the line.
Fantastic. How did you answer that question then about what's the difference between a biology GCSE and a natural history GCSE? They have similarities.
Yes, they have similarities. They're complementary subjects, but they're not the same. So biology studies the systems and the mechanisms of a living planet, the great processes that keep this world functioning. Natural history is that life itself. Right. It is the things. It's right. the birds and the mammals and the reptiles and the trees. And it is how those things, those individuals function on this planet, that's what natural history is about. So to be a natural historian, you have to be able to look and observe and record and understand. You've got to know the names of things. We don't know the names of things anymore. We need to know the names of things, and we need to follow them through the year. And we need to know what that creature, that piece of wildlife, that item of wildlife is doing, why it's doing it, and what it needs. But the GCSE in natural history takes it on another step as well. It says, isn't this wonderful? Isn't wildlife endlessly fascinating and important for us to understand how the planet's functioning or not? But also, isn't it a source of inspiration? So wildlife has inspired some of the greatest art and literature and music and poetry, film and television and radio throughout time. Hmm. So it has been a constant source of inspiration for our innate creativity, and it has helped us to express our humanity.
On art then, did anyone ever say to you, well, why don't we just teach a little bit about wildlife in art instead?
Lots of people have said that. Lots of people have said.
I'm trying to think of all the obvious things people must have said to you over all these years, Mary.
Oh, you won't think of another one. So people, and very rightly, have said, well, and I completely see their point. If you put the natural history into all subjects, so you make it a bigger part of biology, bigger part of geography, bigger part of maths, you know, bigger part of literature and so on, then you will reach more students. Well, the answer to that is that will happen anyway. But wildlife is so important, I don't think it should be consigned to bit parts of other subjects. It is a subject in its own right, like physics or chemistry. You wouldn't say, oh, well, you'll just do a bit more chemistry and physics. You wouldn't say that, because it's a subject that is true to itself in its own right. And to me, natural history is exactly that. It has a great British tradition of studying natural history, which we're in danger of losing those skills. So I think, talking to the exam boards, that there's going to be a greening of examinations of subjects. So more natural history will go in anyway.
Right.
But I think it's absolutely 100% deserves a subject in its own right.
Is that just because you love wildlife in the same way that I love wildlife? And we just think it has to be in there. People must know this stuff. Or is
of
there
course.
A genuine practical reason for why?
If I didn't love it, I wouldn't put this much effort into it, no. I can tell you that. But of course I love it. Of course you love it. And there's lots of us that love it. And there needs to be a lot more of it, because understanding wildlife is absolutely crucial to the future. Unless we can monitor and understand the way the planet works, we will not make the right decisions when we've got these huge, big issues to deal with. We have big, important decisions to make about the future, which won't be easy. But if we don't understand wildlife, we won't take it with us, and we will lose it along the way. I'm convinced that will happen. For example, how studying wildlife helps us to understand is that common birds, say like grey tits and blue tits and pied flycatchers, common birds which we've observed over generations and generations that we know very well through natural history study, it has been noticed that the emergence, the hatching of their chicks is now mismatched with their main food source, which is the oak caterpillar.
Yeah.
So great tits and blue tits are mismatching with the emergence of...
As the climate warms. And
as the climate
insects
warms.
Insects are emerging at different times.
Exactly that. So the oak caterpillar is emerging now earlier and being missed by the hatching of birds, if you see what I mean. So the great peak of caterpillar production from the eggs turning into caterpillars is happening earlier and earlier. And so what we're getting is a mismatch of caterpillars and chicks. We only know that because we study it, because we look, we go out and we look at the birds and we say pike flycatchers are missing oak caterpillar emergence by nearly 2 weeks now. But they are migrants. So
yeah.
They're not reading the signs. The local birds like blue tits and great tits are missing it by 2 or 3 days.
So do we need to know that they're pied flycatchers to understand that there's a problem with climate?
Oh, I think so. I think you do. I think you form a very special relationship with something when you know its name. I mean, I could just call you A or it, but I wouldn't have the same relationship with you because you're called Charlie, and I know Charlie, and I have an image of Charlie in my head. I don't have an image of Nit. And I think with the natural world, it's very similar. Naming, we give names to things because they mean something to us. That's how we work.
That's a really interesting point about names there. So basically, because I was thinking about this before in the context of, I read an article in a newspaper that said 50% of children can't identify a stinging nettle, which seems incredible to me. Yet there are thousands and thousands and thousands of teenagers out on the streets protesting climate change. Is what you're suggesting, therefore, putting names, putting in the smaller details into this bigger picture that people are now beginning to understand?
There is obviously an increasing concern amongst younger people about the planet that we're going to leave to them. And the same people that are out on the streets demonstrating are the ones that are saying we're feeling let down by the education system because we're not being told enough about what's happening. It's not just climate change either. There is the biodiversity emergency that they are identifying as well. Mm. So there is a desire to know more. And if you realise that these great big wonderful blockbuster blue chip films that we all love, like Blue Planet 2 and Seven Worlds, more young people are watching those than ever before. More young people watched Blue Planet 2 than watched The X Factor on the other side. And amazing. And Seven Worlds, the age range between 5 and 35, massive increase in that age range watching Seven Worlds than would normally be watching television at that time for that slot. So it is undeniable that younger generation are interested in natural history, are interested in wildlife.
So there's a hunger there.
Definitely. There's a hunger there. It's almost like as the planet warms, nature's cool, you know? I mean, David Attenborough is...
That's a T-shirt slogan.
It is. David Attenborough is in the top 10 coolest men on Earth, you know? Yeah. And he's up there with Johnny Depp, for goodness sake. So it's...
The world's favourite grandfather.
But he's cool. Yeah. Because he's telling us what they know is... we all know is really important. So the GCSE in natural history is just one step towards filling that gap. You're right, fewer than 50% could name a nettle. 80% don't know what a bluebell is, you know. I mean, these things that you just took for granted a generation ago is now the natural world is this mystery outside. It's this nameless, thin mystery that's disappearing under our noses, and it disappears the less incentive you have to know more about it.
Can I ask you a couple of practical questions then? Who's going to teach this? Because if there's a generation that's grown up without this kind of knowledge, they're the ones that are now becoming teachers. Where does this knowledge come from?
So there will be a gap. There will be a sort of transition period, obviously. So training will absolutely be given to biology and geography teachers. It's going to fall to them, I should imagine, to teach this thing. And so training will 100% be available. But it'll also be English teachers as well because of the literature and the art side of things. So across the spectrum, people will be taught about basic natural history. I've got lots of ideas how to help that along as well. So I'm not just going to suggest this and then abandon it to everybody else to sort out. You've got to be involved in the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
And the teaching of teachers is fundamental because we all know inspiring teachers create inspired students that go on to do great things.
Yeah.
So the teaching of the teachers is vital. And that will be rolled out right across the country. So I am convinced that that will happen. I'm not saying we'll get it right straight away, but, you know, Charlie, we've got to do something.
Yeah.
And what I've never understood is when people have said, oh, children are spending half as much time outside as their parents did, 4 hours a week at the moment compared to 8 hours just a generation ago. And they don't know what a nettle is. They don't know what a bluebell is. In fact, they're not even in the children's dictionaries anymore.
No, that was a terrible decision.
Yeah.
That was Oxford Dictionary didn't...
Yeah, took, and the junior dictionary for children
took a
seven
load
and
of
room.
Wildlife words out of the
Well, a BlackBerry is a handheld communication
Rather
device.
Than a fruit. Wow.
When I've said we must teach then, if there's this great gap between knowledge but a desire to learn, let's fill that gap and teach it. I've often got, oh, no, that's a terrible idea. You can't possibly do that because it won't get enough people doing it. We haven't got the teachers, you know, all these objections. But, you know, let's just do it because we'll create more people, whatever. It will help. It will reach some people and those people will go on to do better things. will, and it will grow as interest grows.
And I would suspect there's a latent interest in there. Most people, when they're given a bit of guidance about wildlife and about biodiversity, do respond to it. It is in there somewhere. Mm. It's just a matter of getting it out, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I read also that you don't want any NGOs involved because they have, quite rightly, as you said, and I've said many times, they have agendas. They will bring a slant or a bias to
I'll qualify
argument.
That statement in that I don't mean I don't want NGOs involved at all. I don't want NGOs dictating the syllabus.
Right.
I don't want NGOs dictating what's in the content of the GCSE. That has to be independent of any organisation. I mean, it would be like giving a political GCSE to the Conservative Party to write, for example. You just wouldn't do it, would you? Because every single political party will come at it from their own point of view and will want their own point of view in there. That can't be the case, and it won't be the case. But we, I'm sure, will rely on the great and wonderful array of NGOs that we have in this country to help inspire and teach the content once it's been decided. That's what I meant by that.
Because they obviously have a massive storehouse of knowledge and expertise.
Of course, and wonderful people working in them. They already run education projects. They're already very good with dealing with children and so on. It's just the content has to be independent of any particular point of view.
You're hoping things will start up around 2021?
22, probably right? Much more likely. 2021 is terrifyingly too close.
Well, I read the article, it was in the yeah. iNewspaper. I said, wow, that's very soon.
That is very, very soon. I mean, well, goodness, who knows? But I think more likely 2022, because that gives us time to write it and to train the trainers and do all the stuff, think it all through properly, get it all right. And 2022 is not that far away.
No, it's rushing up, isn't
yeah.
it? It's rushing up. What would you like then for children that's gone through that? What particularly would you like them to take away from that course?
A greater connection to the natural world, a greater relationship with the natural world. And whether that they stop at GCSE and that's it then, or whether, and my plan is to have an A-level and degrees in it too, and get it in every university through the country. So why not? Why not go from GCSE right the way through to a degree level?
I just envisaged the Mary Colwell University.
I did an O-level in those bygone dinosaur days. I did an O-level in geology and was so inspired by it, I went on to do a degree in it. Why not natural history? I mean, you can do zoology degrees at the moment or environmental science, but that's not the same as natural history. That's what I keep saying. A natural historian, a naturalist, is a wonderful, wonderful person who has real understanding of the world they live in.
You presumably like to see it taught along core subjects like English and maths, the ones that everyone has to do. How likely do you think that is?
I don't think that's likely yet. I think it's going to be one of those
2025.
Leave it with me. I think it will be a subject that you will choose to make up the rest of the subjects. So instead of or alongside geography or music or whatever it is, you know. But let's see, you know, it's going to be in schools in 2022, and then who knows where we can push it after that.
And do you see it starting within a region first? You're here in Bristol, it's kind of an enlightened area, actually. I can imagine something like that going down well in Bristol schools to begin with. Or do you see it as a nationwide rollout from day one?
I think it's a nationwide rollout, but I can see that, I don't know, because that's not my expertise, but the exam boards, I could see they'd want to test it in certain schools and particularly in inner cities. There is another point that people raise, how on earth can somebody living in an inner city like me in inner Bristol or someone in the centre of London have the same opportunity as someone, you know, living out in the countryside? I think that isn't a concern.
No.
I think there's a lot of green spaces in cities.
There's a lot more wildlife in cities than people realise.
27,000 parks in this country. Yeah. I mean, you know, I could do a GCSE in natural history looking at my very small urban garden and still get nowhere near to understanding enough about it.
No. I get worried about using the word passion because it's overused, but this is a real passion for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely, and has been for a long time, and it's growing. I because I think it'll make a difference. If I didn't think it would make a difference, I wouldn't feel passionate about it. But I can't just sit back and just think nothing, you know, nothing's going to happen. Oh dear, somebody else will sort it out. Oh dear, isn't it terrible? We're losing connection with nature. and then get sort of despondent. I'm just not like that. If I see a problem, I want to try and solve it. I may not get it right, but I'm going to try. And until we try, we won't know, will we?
It does take incredible determination to think of an idea and push it through. And 11 years on, you're getting closer to it actually does. Happening.
But I couldn't have done it without the wonderful people and the great support I've had around me.
Oh, that's fantastic, Mary. I'm so looking forward to this actually happening, and hopefully
you'll invite me back.
Would I take it myself? Yes, I would actually.
Great. Well, you can be one of the guinea pigs.
I would love to be a guinea pig. Actually.
Dust off your old school shorts. Come and join in.
I've got my lycras from cycling. I would fit right in on the benches there. What a fantastic idea. Yes, I would love to do that.
Yeah. I think that's the other thing that I found is a lot of adults have written to me saying, can we do it? Well, and I would love to be able to do that too.
Into adult education and nice, you know, adult education classes. It's fantastic.
Yeah, hope so.
And then it'll trickle down.
The sooner we get a nature literate society, the better we'll be able to tackle the big problems that we're going to face.
That's such a quotable line. We'll end there. Thank you very much indeed, Mary.
Thanks.
Mary Colwell talking with me in January 2020. Thank you very much for listening. Mary's also leading the fight to halt and reverse the decline in the British population of the curlew, which, if there's any justice in the world, will feature in that GCSE we've just discussed. And we took the opportunity to talk about that fight as well. Please look out for Mary Colwell on curlews right here on the War on Wildlife Project's website.